On Tech News Today, Nokia's Android phone is real. Google robots might build iPhones, and the internet protests the NSA. All that and more coming up next.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
It's Tuesday, February 11th, 2014, and this is Tech News Today. This episode of Tech News Today is brought to you by Squarespace, the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. For a free two-week trial and 10% off, go to squarespace.com and use the offer code TNT2. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Mike Elgin, and Jason Howell is off today. Tech News Today explores the most important stories of the day in conversation with the world's leading journalists. Joining us today as our guest is Kevin Toefel, who works as the mobile editor at GigaOM. Welcome, Kevin.
Thanks. Good to be here, Mike.
So you're expecting a foot of snow? Is that what you told me?
Yeah, we've had 43 inches in the Philadelphia region so far. I think we averaged 13. And they're calling for another 10 to 12 inches on Thursday this week.
Well, I don't envy you. Everybody talks about living in places where they have seasons, but when it comes time to shovel, I'm out.
I'm California. Right there with you.
Well, let's get straight to the news. Nokia's rumored and leaked Normandy Android phone is real, according to the Wall Street Journal. The phone will run a forked version of Android and offer a Nokia app store, as well as installed Nokia-made Android apps and possibly Microsoft apps and services. With us is Maggie Reardon, a reporter for CNET. Welcome, Maggie. I understand you're in a taxi in New York.
I am. Well, yes. Thank
you for Skyping in under duress and under harsh conditions. The Wall Street Journal piece said about the Nokia Android phone that Microsoft is making an ally out of Google. Is it clear to you that Microsoft is fully on board with the Android strategy?
Well, I don't know if it's so much the Android strategy as much as this is a cheaper way for Nokia to build low-cost phones. And I think that, you know, the strategy looks very similar to what Amazon has done with the Kindle. So I don't think that it's really Microsoft getting in bed here with Google at all.
Yeah. So some of the articles seem to indicate that this is something that is a slap in the face for Microsoft. And others, including the Wall Street Journal, suggested that Microsoft was completely behind it. The argument is that Windows Phone, Microsoft's own Windows Phone operating system, can't really run on the really low-end phones that Nokia would like to make. Is that your understanding?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the specifications for the Windows Phone platform is a lot higher grade than for Google, so for the Android platform. So it makes more sense from an economic standpoint that if you want to run on super cheap phones that you sell in developing markets, the most cost-effective way to do that is to use Android.
Right. Well, go ahead, Kevin.
Maggie, it's Kevin Toefel with GigaOM. I'm on the show today, and I got a question for you because it seems to me like this could replace the Nokia Asha phones, which is the low-end line right now, mainly because those phones can't run any Microsoft apps or services. So my take is that this is going to give Nokia/Microsoft a good foot in the door at the low end of the market. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, it totally does. And you know, and that's a good point. I mean, I think that what we're going to be seeing here is a mixture of some Android apps that are you know, the basic apps that people want. And also, we're going to probably see some apps that are specifically developed for this device, which probably are going to look a lot like the apps that are developed for the Microsoft platform.
Now, you as you know, there have been leaks about the interface, showing the interface for this phone for Normandy, and everybody seems to agree that it looks pretty much like the Windows Phone user interface. I don't think it looks exactly that way, but I think it's curious that Nokia would do this, and also that they would come out with an Android phone just as the company is being sold to Microsoft, just as the mobile hardware division is being sold to Microsoft.
Well, I mean, I think, you know, I'm not sure if this was the optimal timing for them, but I think when you're in a market and you need to address that market and do what you've got to do, I mean, you've just got to do it, right? I mean, right. The it takes a while to actually come out with the designs for these products and to develop them. So I don't think that it was really intentional that this is coming out, you know, just as the deal is closing. I think it's more out of necessity.
What's your opinion? Do you think Microsoft should, even though they're probably not going to, get into the Android software business?
Well, I mean, I think that, you know, this makes sense from an economic standpoint, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, as we discussed already, the reference designs for Android are much cheaper. It's much cheaper to build phones on Android than it is on the Windows Phone platform. So when you're addressing the very low end of the market, I mean, these margins are, you know, paper thin here. So, you know, every penny counts. And I think it's a smart strategy. I mean, I'm not sure if it's going to work. You know, it's a very competitive market at the low end. And you've got a lot of Chinese manufacturers in particular who are really addressing this market.
Yeah, there's a lot of people going after the low end. And now we've recently learned that HTC is as well. It's crowded and no margins. It looks pretty grim for the low end. It's kind of curious that Nokia would be going after that.
But it also seems like the high end is a tough market too.
That's
so,
right.
You know, it's like all around, I would not be someone who would want to be getting into the hardware business right now.
And yet everybody seems to want to do that. Well, thank you, Maggie. I appreciate you Skyping in under those harsh conditions. And again, I thank you for your insights.
Thank you.
You can find Maggie at CNET.com and also Maggie_Reardon on Twitter. Well, in a second, I'm going to tell you about one of the most sophisticated malware-driven espionage campaigns ever uncovered. But first, I want to tell you about the single best site for creating websites anywhere online. And of course, I'm talking about Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform that makes it fast and easy to create your own professional website or online portfolio. Now, if you saw the Super Bowl, you may have caught their ad. Their ad basically is called A Better Web Awaits. And if you haven't seen it, you should go check it out on their blog at blog.squarespace.com. It's a really cool ad because it shows how ugly and crowded and noisy the internet is and how you can create a website using Squarespace that's the opposite of all that, that's clean and beautifully designed. And of course, it's super easy to do that with Squarespace because they have 25 beautiful templates for you to start with. So you go in there and you choose one of the beautiful templates, and then you can use their powerful tools to customize it so that your website is unique on all the internet. It's really, really an awesome website, and I use it. I've used it for years, and I really, really love Squarespace. They have tech support 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, which I really appreciate. Plus, there's a completely redesigned customer help site for easier access to help articles and video workshops. They now support e-commerce, so if you have something to sell, this is the place to do it. They'll handle all the hard parts about e-commerce, and all you have to do is build your website and collect money. It's great for nonprofits, cash wedding registries, school fund drives, and businesses for selling just about anything you have to sell. It starts at only $8 a month and includes a free domain name if you sign up for a year. Squarespace, of course, is famously mobile-ready. Their new Squarespace Metric app for iPhone and iPad lets you check site stats like page views, unique visitors, and social media follows. And with a blog app, you can make text updates, tap and drag images to change layouts, and monitor comments even as you're running around town like Maggie is in New York City. Their code is beautiful, too. They're not just they don't just give you beautiful websites, but the back-end code, as any developer can tell you, is amazingly elegant and well created. So start a free 2-week trial today with no credit card required and start building your website immediately. When you decide to sign up with Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code TNT2 to get 10% off and also to show your support for Tech News Today. And we appreciate that. We also thank Squarespace for their support of Tech News Today. And remember that a better web awaits, and it starts with your new Squarespace website. Well, yeah, there's a malware campaign out there that is being called one of the most sophisticated spy malware campaigns ever. It's called Mask, and it's been around since at least 2007, infecting the Windows, OS X, and Linux operating systems of at least 380 victims in 31 countries. Its purpose is to steal encryption keys, keystrokes, and even Skype conversations. I hope they're not stealing the conversations of our guests today. And this is really an amazing thing to me because this has been around since around 2007, and it's just being discovered. So, you know, this is a sort of in the category, Kevin, of maybe Stuxnet or one of these tightly targeted campaigns. Mostly we think of malware in terms of these mass things that are mass mailed to everybody and they're trying to get as many people as possible. These are highly targeted, and it speaks of an espionage campaign to steal specific types of secrets.
Yeah, and it's getting kind of scary how complex these types of malware attacks are, how widespread they are, and what types of targets they go after. I mean, personally, I'm not too upset if somebody steals my Skype conversation, but, you know, you've got things like Stuxnet that are affecting major infrastructures of governments and things like that. So I was going to say that I'm glad I use my Chromebook because it's pretty malware-free, but, you know, it runs atop Linux, and this has already hit Linux, so I'm still concerned.
Yeah, it's an odd thing. Now, mask is actually the translation of the name of this. It's actually Careto, which is Spanish for mask, I believe. And it's possible that the creators are Spanish speakers. They don't know who's behind it. And it's just the oddest thing. The victims include government agencies, embassies, research institutions, private equity firms, activists, energy companies, and companies in other industries. So it seems to be potentially aimed at security, at international relations, and possibly industrial espionage. It just reeks of state sponsorship. And in fact, Kaspersky Labs discovered it because they found that it exploited a vulnerability in an older version of Kaspersky's antivirus product. And again, this has been around for 7 years, and they're just now discovering it. It uses email phishing, spear phishing, to lure people to malicious websites. And many of these are fake. Pretty convincing fake websites, like a fake Guardian site, and there's also a fake Washington Post website where people think they're going to the newspaper site, but in fact, they are essentially being manipulated to go to a certain a malware-related site. Other state-sponsored malware includes Stuxnet, Flame, Dooku, Red October, IceFog, and Gauss, and again, they're calling this one of the most sophisticated they've ever seen. So I imagine we're going to be hearing more about this very shortly. Well, wireless charging is a great idea. I've been waiting for years and years for the day when I can just come home at the end of the day, grab my phone, throw it on maybe a pad or on a desk, and just have it charge automatically. Unfortunately, there are three competing incompatible standards, so it hasn't really taken off the way it should have taken off. But now there's hope. Two of the standards may soon share technology. The Power Matters Alliance and the Alliance for Wireless Power have signed an agreement to use each other's features. That leaves the Wireless Power Consortium's Qi standard as the outsider. With us to talk about this is CNET Executive Editor Roger Chang. Welcome, Roger.
Thanks for having me.
What's this deal all about, Roger?
Yeah, well, as you said, it's basically a partnership between these two standards that allow the two technologies that are incompatible to sit alongside each other and play nice with each other in a single device. So the idea is that, you know, as this further consolidates, it gives companies and consumer electronic makers a little bit more confidence to put wireless charging into their devices.
It doesn't mean that they're now compatible. It doesn't mean that you have one of these standards that you can also use it with a device that supports the other.
Sadly, no. It's still they use fundamentally different technologies. The Alliance for Wireless Power runs on magnetic resonance, which they say is a bit more advanced, but it's also a little bit further off, whereas the PMA uses inductive charging, which is sort of the standard wireless charging technique now. It's similar to what Qi uses as well. Unfortunately, those standards are also incompatible, which makes it still a very difficult proposition for anyone looking for a universal wireless charging solution.
Kevin, do you think that this will affect the adoption of wireless charging?
Well, I hope so. I really do. The thing is, I mean, I use a Qi charger on an iPhone as well as some of my other devices. And as Roger said, these aren't making the standards compatible. So basically what this is going to do is, this is not a product announcement. This is basically for the handset makers, the tablet makers, to start using the new technologies together. And it's going to take a good 6 to 12 months, I think, before we actually see any impact from this. And for the moment, ironically, the outsider we said is Qi. They have at least 100 devices that can charge wirelessly right now. Most, a lot of the Nokia phones, for example, the Lumias, the Google Nexus 7, and a bunch of others work with the Qi standard. So it's still quite a bit of a mess, in my opinion.
Roger, which do you think is the stronger standard? Do you have any favorites?
Well, it's I think it's not a matter of picking favorites. Like I said, the Alliance for Wireless Power uses magnetic resonance. It's a technology that is still really getting underway now. The standards are being formed for that right now. So we won't actually see products for a little while. So that's seen as more of the second generation of wireless charging. What you're seeing right now with like the Nokia phone and Samsung uses the technology that, again, resonant technology, which is has been around for a long time, or not resonant, sorry, inductive charging, which has been around for a long time. And as Kevin noted, most of the phones out there use the Qi standard. The ironic thing is the PMA, which uses the same technology that's oddly enough not compatible, has been outfitting, you know, Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and Madison Square Garden with charging stations, but only work with their technology. So until there's a full sort of agreement between these standards, I think it's still going to be kind of a mess. And it's not a matter of choosing favorite technologies. It's just a matter of all these guys working together.
Now, everybody talks about how Starbucks, for example, you also mentioned Dunkin' Donuts and others, are using wireless charging technology. But these are only tests, I think, in the Boston area, in the case of Starbucks, and also in Silicon Valley. Are these tests succeeding? Are people going to Starbucks and Dunkin' Donuts and charging their phones?
If you'd ask them, they say yes. But I'm a bit more skeptical about that. The trials have gone on for a long time, and they were supposed to have been expanded if they did well midway through last year, and nothing happened. I know McDonald's is also trying it out in Europe, but so far, I mean, the adoption has been pretty low. And the problem is phones that are wireless charging compatible are using different technology. So you have to buy a compatible cover or case that you put on your iPhone or Galaxy S4. To make it compatible with the infrastructure that's out there at, you know, at the Starbucks or McDonald's.
Yeah, it seems to me that this isn't really going to take off until all the phones are using a similar standard, or where a Starbucks or McDonald's or Dunkin' Donuts can just build in these charging stations into their tables and have them support any phone. When that happens, I think people are going to use them on a mass level, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. This battle between the three alliances is going to continue, as far as I can tell, and I think we're not going to have a compatible single standard possibly ever.
I think it will happen. I think we'll get something consistent. It's happened with Wi-Fi. It's happened with other standards. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It's going to take a long time, and until these companies can all get together and agree on a single standard, wireless charging is continuing to be a niche thing at best.
Well, thank you for joining us to talk about wireless charging, Roger. Appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
You can find Roger at CNET and also Roger W. Cheng, C-H-E-N-G, on Twitter. Well, you may see protest splash screens and banners all over the internet today. The movement is a protest against NSA mass surveillance. It's called The Day We Fight Back, and the idea is to motivate people to call or email lawmakers in the United States to ban the broad collection of personal data online. And Kevin, I think that this is one of those things like the SOPA and PIPA campaigns from long ago that could very well be successful. And the reason I think it might be successful is this is one of those rare instances where the powerful industry voices and also individual users are on the same side against a government practice. And when mm-hmm. that's the case, I think that you can get a lot of buy-in, a lot of movement on the protest level.
I think that's a fair point. I also think there's a slight difference this time around, though, that could make this a little more challenging. I think it's great to see this protest, and I don't want my personal information monitored all the time without my knowledge. The trick on this one is, though, or the twist, there's still so much I don't think we really know about what the NSA is or isn't doing. I mean, even the lawmakers that we should be talking to, I don't know if they even have the whole story, and that's even more concerning to me than anything else. So what kind of power do they have if we request these changes and protest for it is a question I have in my mind.
Yeah, there's how much power they have, and there's also how much competence they have. We learned recently that after, I think, most people believed that the NSA was harvesting all telephone metadata, we found out that it could be around 20 or 30% of the metadata that they're harvesting. They really mm-hmm. don't have the ability to do all the things that people fear the most. And I think that in the absence of knowledge about what they're capable of doing, people tend to assume that they can do a lot more than they probably can do, and that they are doing a lot more than they probably are doing. So, I think that people will want to protest this regardless of those points of ignorance. And again, the point that is a little bit different in this case to the SOPA and PIPA campaigns is that we will never know what the NSA is doing. This is a spy organization whose function is to steal secrets and to remain secret and to keep its operations secret. And so I don't think we're ever going to come to the point where they say, okay, here's everything the NSA is doing specifically, and have us enjoy a lot of confidence that that is in fact the case.
Yep, that's the key. We're just not able to have a coherent, completely understanding conversation about it, because by its very definition, the NSA is not going to share that information with us.
Yeah. Is anybody going to oppose this internet-wide protest? I don't hear a lot of voices in favor of mass surveillance by the NSA.
I don't know a single person online or offline that wants to be monitored by the NSA or have them have the power to have mass surveillance. I mean, it's just a fundamental thing that most societies don't want.
Yep. And it's interesting that the protest is geared toward pressuring U.S. lawmakers, but there are events worldwide. The rest of the world doesn't particularly care for this type of activity either. And a lot of times we have these conversations around constitutional issues. It's unconstitutional to spy on Americans. And the rest of the world kind of goes, well, what about us? We're not covered by the Constitution. Why is it okay to spy on the rest of the world?
Yeah, and that's a fair point. But the difference, again, here is the NSA has worked with Britain's intelligence agency, which is GCHQ, to share data. And we're finding out so many little things from the Snowden leaks about this is not just the NSA spying on Americans. It is a worldwide effort, you know, through cable ties over undersea cables. So any country could be impacted in theory. So this becomes now a worldwide phenomenon. The internet has made the world a much smaller place, and this is a perfect example of that.
Yeah. So look for those protest banners all over the internet today. Well, Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg and his wife Priscilla Chan were the biggest philanthropists in the United States last year, according to Chronicle of Philanthropy. The couple gave a single donation of 18 million shares of Facebook stock, valued at $970 million, that's almost $1 billion, to a Silicon Valley charity in December. The top 50 contributors gave $7.7 billion last year and also pledged $2.9 billion. For the future. With us to throw ice water on all this is Sean McElwee. Sean is a New York-based writer who's written for Salon, The Atlantic, and The Rolling Stone. Welcome, Sean.
Thanks for having me.
Sean, in your recent Salon piece, you seemed less than impressed by Zuckerberg's generosity.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of philanthropy in general. And I think a lot of people think that philanthropy, first off, implies charity, which it doesn't. Often this is donations to colleges and universities, mainly to get children in, or art, which are good things to fund, but they're not charity. And we don't know what the $1 billion is going to yet, but if we look at the $100 million that he sent to Newark public schools, we could ask some questions. We can say, why is it that public schools, which are in a democracy supposed to be funded by the public, why do we have to have them funded by billionaires instead of tax dollars? It makes a lot more sense to have a socially funded rather than a privately funded system.
Well, you say that philanthropy is inefficient in your article, and are you saying that taxation and government programs are more efficient than philanthropic giving?
I'm saying that if you want to have something like social democracy, if you want to have education, if you want to have healthcare, if you want to have childcare, the best way to do it and the only way that you can actually fund this is through taxation. That's what we see happening in Europe with social democracy. There's never been a society with a social safety net that didn't fund it based on taxation.
Now, do you think that that this kind of giving, I think you implied it in your article, that it's mostly PR and that it's really not that costly for gazillionaires like Mark Zuckerberg to
absolutely
get
as a proportion of their income, wealthy people actually give less than the American middle class. It's not, I mean, this is a guy who bought the four houses around his. So this is a very wealthy person. This isn't really too much out of his, too much for him.
You also said that philanthropy is undemocratic. What did you mean by that?
Exactly what I was talking about before. So take the donation that he gave to the hospital near his house. Well, it seems like a very arbitrary way to decide which hospitals get funding, whichever happened to be closest to a Silicon billionaire's house. So in a democratic system, we want to make sure that the money goes to the places that can best help people. New York public school system, you have the same way. You happen to have a very, very high profile mayor at the time, Cory Booker, who's able to get this donation. What about kids in Detroit public schools? Do they have to go find M&M to get philanthropy? It just makes a lot more sense to do this through the federal government or through the state government rather than just through, I mean, private charity is great. For example, the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation are doing things in contraception in Africa that it might not be quite as easy to do through the government because of, say, religious concerns. So in that sense, it's good. But we put way too much faith in philanthropy to solve problems that really need to be solved through the democratic system. That is, through things like foreign aid, through taxation, and then social spending.
Well, I thank you, Sean, for joining us today to present your views about philanthropy.
Absolutely.
You can find Sean at seanmcelwee.com. Well, Google's working with Foxconn on factory robots, according to a new report in the Wall Street Journal. Foxconn, of course, is the world's largest contract manufacturer and probably best known as the company that builds Apple iPhones. The paper also said Google is expected to build a new robot operating system for manufacturing. So, Kevin, what do you think about this? I mean, Google recently bought DeepMind, which is an artificial intelligence startup that enables computers to learn and theoretically enables robots to learn. Do you see Google's addition to the world of manufacturing robots as being self-learning robots?
I think that could happen. I mean, you mentioned the recent purchase they made. They've hired Ray Kurzweil as head of their artificial intelligence group. He's a brilliant individual. This is clearly where Google is trying to head. For what purpose? I mean, that remains to be seen yet. Obviously, you're going to have people who are like, oh, Google is Skynet, and here comes the days of the Terminator with self-aware robots. But, you know, there is a lot of robotics currently in place in manufacturing. I mean, that's a huge industry for robotics, but yet I'm sure there can still be some improvements there. I don't think it's a bad thing to have self-aware manufacturing robots. I mean, if somebody stumbles and falls into an area where they might get hurt, for example, by the manufacturing process, a robot could be smart enough to not continue that process. So there's definite benefits and possibilities there.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Foxconn, of course, is a Taiwan-based company that has focused on mainland China for years and years. But recently, they've been moving outside of China, going to the United States, setting up factories in Indonesia and elsewhere, Brazil. And robotics, and especially really, really good robotics that are good enough to replace the nimble fingers of skilled workers in a factory, basically change the whole equation for where you locate a factory. It no longer has to be in a place where you have an educated, motivated population of people who don't get paid very much, which is essentially the dynamic that exists today. Once you have robots running most of the operations in a factory and doing most of the work in a factory, it can essentially be anywhere where there's reliable electricity.
Right. It becomes a question of infrastructure location as opposed to where the labor is that you can train people and pay them and so forth. So again, there could be economies of scale there. You know, the one question that comes to mind, though, is what about the labor market? What are the impacts to that where, you know, Foxconn expands into an area where it could have hired a couple thousand people? Instead, it just built a factory filled with robots. Obviously, that location is not going to be too happy because it does no good for them.
Right. So get into the if you want a job in the manufacturing future, get into the robot maintenance business, because it looks like we're headed toward serious robotics in manufacturing. Well, a giant campus for tech startups planned for Silicon Valley's Sunnyvale looks like something right out of the Jetsons. It's called the Central and Wolf Campus, and it will replace the boring office park that's currently there. The idea is to build a mini city, sort of like a Googleplex or an Apple spaceship-type building, but for tiny startups. Architectural plans show the roof taken over by a park-like garden. Looks pretty amazing. Silicon Valley, I've lived here for years, and it is pretty much blighted by all these ugly office parks. And recently, in the last couple of years, we've had some beautiful futuristic buildings finally coming into the valley. So this is going to be an interesting project we'll be keeping an eye on. Well, our publicity stunt of the day comes from Sony. The company is trying to sell a waterproof MP3 player. So to emphasize how waterproof it really is, the company is selling it inside bottles of water which are for sale in gym vending machines. It's called the Bottle Walkman, if you can believe that. And I guess you can drink the water, just don't swallow the MP3 player.
It's a good gimmick.
Yeah, isn't that brilliant?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not easy to sell MP3 players these days, and I guess if it's available and it comes with a bottle of water, that's a real benefit if you're working out. Well, that's our show. I thank you very much, Kevin, for joining us today and being our guest. And I appreciate all your insights on all these different stories.
I appreciate it, Mike. Anytime. Thanks.
Thanks. Well, send your news tips to our email address at tnt@twit.tv or call 260-TNT-SHOW and leave a message. Also, post and upvote your favorite stories on our subreddit at technewstoday.reddit.com and find the rest of our social pages by searching for Tech News Today on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and YouTube. If you haven't done already, please subscribe to Tech News Today at twit.tv/TNT. I'm Mike Elgin. See you tomorrow. Thank you, Tech Dino. What do you think? Do you guys agree with Sean about philanthropy?
I don't know. That's a toughie because, people who have money should be able to spend it the way they see fit. And if they have a cause that they believe in, I have no problem with that.